Hi, I am Russ, a very grateful recovering compulsive overeater, and I am from Central Jersey Inner Group, and it is my pleasure to speak today, and also being the first speaker. You know, sometimes in the past, I said, oh my goodness, I'm the first speaker, and this I had no choice because we decided to do it in alphabetical order, and Central Jersey Inner Group is first. You know, before I get into my qualification or my share, and I will, I wanted to begin with the person who it all began with, and that is our founder, Roseanne. And in 1968, when OA was only 8 years old, she wrote a pamphlet called I Put My Hand in Yours. And the beginning part, and then the OA bookstore, we made the reprint available in 1990, and you could still get that. And I have a copy here. And the first paragraph is I Put My Hand in Yours. We will be saying later as our Son of Unity. But I'm going to read the second paragraph. Although it only takes two to practice the 12 steps recovery program and to stop eating compulsively, we have learned that there is strength in numbers, and that if we band together in a group, we can share many kinds of experience, strength, and hope with each other. And that's exactly what I'm hoping I can do today, is share my experience, strength, and hope. And what I'll be doing is telling you what got me here, what kept me here, and how I stay in recovery. And I love the newest definition of abstinence recovery, but the part in abstinence is on a daily basis. And that's the only way. I strive for a permanent recovery, but I know I can only attain it one day at a time. So again, I will tell you just a little about me. And I heard this last year, and you know, I love going to meetings because it doesn't matter how long you've been going to meetings. You either hear something for the first time or you're ready to hear it for the first time. And this person said they were a member of the No Matter What Club. And she explained it as such, abstinent no matter what. No matter what is in my life, I am abstinent. The 12 steps are perfectly written. And we hear all the time that we can't, you know, we have to do them to the best of our ability. We can't work them perfectly. Not that I disagree, but in a sense I do, and it's the first step. That step I do have to take perfectly. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives have become unmanageable. I can't have any wiggle room. I have to do it with a whole heart. I have to do it in my subconscious. I have to truly believe it. Because my disease is a powerful one. It's cunning and baffling, as we hear. And our disease tells us we don't have one. So, length of time, in September of 22, I celebrated 42 years of being in Overeaters Anonymous, and I actually next day, on September 3rd in 2022, I celebrated 42 years of abstaining one day at a time. And I don't know, have an exact date on that, but in the beginning of 2023, I am maintaining a healthy body weight of approximately 80 pound weight loss. So that's my statistics. That's where I am now. what got me there? Well, 14 years of dieting. I was 17 when I came into pro, 17. I began my dieting career, and my mother took me to a diet doctor. In the late 60s, they were very popular. And, you know, there was this mysterious thing called diet pills. And they were really amphetamines. And regardless of your age, and I always prescribed them at age 17. And, you know, little did I know, I had an extremely compulsive personality. So it's not the best thing to prescribe a 17-year-old. And, but, you know, I have a lot of There Is a God story, a lot of them. And this is the first one that I can recall. And that was, I was in the sun, and I had a combination of sun poisoning and an allergic reaction to the amphetamines. And I almost was hospitalized. So I was immediately taken off the pills. And basically that diet doctor that I did see, I guess for a few months, that I would go, and I basically, he was my first policeman. He was the first person I kind of reported to. And that also began me doing it for others. You know, I didn't have the concept of doing it for myself, but I wanted to please others. I wanted to please my mother. You know, I wanted to please my friends. And in a sense, I wanted to please myself, because that began the ideology that all my problems was based on my compulsive overeating. And the symptom that I had was obesity. So, you know, it started to thinking that, you know, if I only was thin, you know, all these things, the heavens would open up. People will, you know, they would fawn all over me. Women would go out with me. And when I was working, I still had that, you know, those crazy beliefs. And it was that, you know, I would get that promotion. I would get that, you know, and I started to almost believe that those who were thin and a normal weight and were attractive, they had no problems. Their life was wonderful. That was really certainly proven over the years. And, you know, the one thing about it is the progressiveness of our illness. And I found that in the last couple of years before I walked into the rooms, it was getting very difficult for me to have any length of time in dieting. I was close to my top weight, which is about 95 pounds what I am now. I was approaching that quickly. I was thinking about surrender, and surrendering just to the way I was, and nothing I could do about it. So that is absolutely surrender in the worst way. It certainly isn't the surrender we talk in this wonderful program, you know, steps, but it was surrender to the illness. And so in the last 2 years, the behavior with the food, and was convincing myself rapidly that I was not normal. That the people were all watching me, especially in work. So you go to any length, not in the way we do today, but in a way to like hide my eating. I would go to different areas. We had a big building. And then I felt that all eyes were upon Ross. So I started eating in the bathroom at work because nobody would see me there. And, we talk about this turning points, and well, it wasn't a turning point because I kept eating, but I remember, and that's where I was doing things. I was taking food from the kids. I was living with myself. By myself, because I was divorced at 27, and a lot to do with compulsive overeating, and you know, how I hid in the food, how my world revolved around the food. So anyway, so behaviors were including, you know, and you know, you do hear it from time to time, you know, people going into the garbage. If that, I remember throwing away a food, a box of stuff, and because I was really bloated and I felt terrible, and I would, you know, so I fell asleep, and when I woke up, that box kept calling me, and as I'm eating it, I'm telling myself how sick I was. That's all I was doing, just telling myself what a sick person I was, and you're not normal, but no solution. And then one day in work, someone came up to me who I didn't really respect, in a sense, enough to do it, you know, to say anything to him. But he said the opening words that I'll never forget: "I see the way you eat, Ross." Now, I was at work. I went to great length to hide my eating, but I guess I didn't. The obesity, you know, kind of was a hint. And I heard bad stuff about this guy. And I said, what the heck? Why would he? You know, I worked in a warehouse, and though I wasn't a Teamster, I worked among Teamsters. Some guy, some of them are rough. And I heard, like, you know, he had a motorcycle, and beer, and all this stuff. And but I was as polite as I could be, because I was probably a little afraid of him. And I said, thank you, but, you know, no thanks. And about a month of eating and a crazy diet thing I was on and all this stuff, and that Overeaters Anonymous came in my mind. And that's when I walked into my first meeting. And though I didn't realize it, I was being exposed to the beautiful unity that we find among our own. People who we don't know extending their heart in their hand and willing to help and willing to share their experience and their strength and their hope. And though I know it now, you know, my first meeting, you know, and when I came in 1980, we had large meetings, and this particular meeting, and we had 2-hour meetings, and this meeting had about 50 or so people a week on an average. So there was, you know, a lot of a love in the room and fellowship, and you know, I was able to get a sponsor that first time, and I listened, and I heard people that were in recovery. I didn't really at my first meeting know the concept of recovery. I heard two words or two phrases. One was compulsive overeater, and I said, yeah, that's me. I mean, I knew it. Then they used another word, and I couldn't say it. And, you know, the people in the room, many of them said they had it, and I couldn't say it. And it took me, I don't know, 6 or 7 weeks or 6 or 7 meetings before I could even say that word out, you know, out loud. And you know, in the beginning of me telling my story, I call it an illness, because I just want the impact of hearing that compulsive overeating is a disease. I didn't want to believe it. And then there was more. It's a disease that tells you you don't have one. It is a disease that you can't cure. It is a disease that can only be put in remission. And the reason why I had a problem with the word disease is because diseases eventually can kill. And they certainly can affect your life. I was a physical mess at age 31 when they walked into this program. You know what? I don't know where I would be today if I didn't, or if I would be. And I truly mean that. I really believe that. I really don't, you know. And so.
Ross, 5 more minutes. I'm sorry.
Okay. That's okay. I appreciate that. And I knew I was in the right place. And, you know, I kept coming back, you know, and we talk about crossroads, and I just, and also I want to tell you how people reached out to me. I did have one. When my late wife became ill, and that was in, I think, 97 or 98, we went distances for, you know, we went distances for treatment. And so I really basically had to step away from service, and I was doing service. I think I joined in the group in my second year, and I was doing it, and I was a, you know, WSBC delegate in the 90s. And then I stepped away from inner group and from service beyond a group level. And also I wasn't making the amount of meetings I was making. Well, sadly, she passed away in February 1999. And I had all the, you know, and I had now the opportunity to go as many meetings as I was going before. And I found myself not going to meetings in 2 weeks. I was hanging on to my abstinence. I was still abstaining one day at a time. But, you know, I now know I could not have done it for long, because it would have morphed into a diet. If I didn't have the spiritual and emotional sustenance that I get at meetings with you all, I really believe I would have walked away. And I was getting people reaching out to me. And so I finally said to myself, I got to find a meeting that's my home meeting, that I go no matter what every week. And we hear the, you know, the more meetings you miss, the easier it is to miss them. And the good side of that is the more that you make, the harder it is to miss them. And that's so true. And, you know, they reached out to me, and I was embraced. I was always embraced. Even when I had stepped away from in the group, and you know, when I always was, you know, and I just want to share a couple things. I know I only have a couple minutes left, important things. And I was 1 or 2 years in the program, and someone in the back of the room, I'll never forget this. And they said, I intend to be abstinent one day at a time for the rest of my life. I have never forgotten that. That's what I do. I intend to be abstinent one day at a time for the rest of my life. I will die with this disease, but as they say, I won't die from it. And the other thing, abstinence. You know, I would say, I said many times, abstinence is the most important thing in my life without exception. But every time, but I would always have a feeling that I had to like add to it. I had to explain more, you know, and I would say, you know, but I do, you know, I do realize that, you know, I have a threefold illness, emotional, physical, and spiritual. My recovery needs to be on all three levels. And sometimes I would even verbalize that and said, you know, but I need through the steps to have sustenance. From the emotional and spiritual side, I need spiritual fitness, I need emotional fitness, and I need physical fitness. If I just concentrate on the physical, there very aware that it can easily morph into a diet. So I would always have to add that. And then I think it's the latest edition in the O.A. Brown book, in the personal stories. And it was a man who authored this, and he said the same thing, but he said it slightly different. At that time, I heard that. I have always said it this way. And what the person simply, he just added two words. What he simply said was, God-given abstinence is the most important thing in my life, without exception. God did not give me a diet. God, as my shirt says, a happy, joyous, and free life. God gave me a life. God gave me recovery. God gave me abstinence. And with that, I know I'm close, and I will say that it has been a pleasure, and thank you for letting me share.
Right on time, Russ. Perfect.
Thank you, Judy. I'll time myself here.
Okay.
Here we go. Hi, everybody. I am Karen.
Karen, I'm sorry. Do you want me to do a reminder, or are you going to just time yourself completely?
I think I got it.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
But if I slip, you'll let me know. Thanks, Ronnie. Again, I'm Karen C. from North Jersey, a grateful compulsive overeater, really glad to be here, and I'm glad to be recovering one day at a time. I always like to say that I never choose to say that word in the past tense, because, you know, I agree that, you know, by the grace of God, I'm doing this daily and get that daily reprieve. And it's something that I do not take for granted at all. And I was really glad to hear what our topic was going to be for today in terms of being unity, because, you know, I've had a really interesting relationship with unity in this program. I probably went to my first OA meeting about 30 years ago, and have had an interesting one. I'll get into it in a second. Moments of research and development outside of the rooms, and moments of experimentation. So, you know, just for clarification, I've been abstinent now about 10 years and maybe 9 months, and am down probably about 50 pounds from my highest. You know, but like I said, there's been some times of experimentation prior to that, and taking too much to heart when I heard somebody say, take the best and leave the rest. Well, I had too many experiences of leaving the parts that I really needed. So I don't follow that suggestion anymore. But what really struck me about this topic is that for me, this is the most unique program that can at the same time focus on unity and not have to be about uniformity. And that was a little confusing to me, and sometimes is confusing to newcomers coming in, because it's like there weren't all these absolute rules and regulations that, you know, nobody was going to kick me out if I didn't line up the way I do program with the way everyone else does it. And you know, just as many beautiful faces as are on this call, there are different ways that people do program. And that can be confusing and at the same time liberating. So it's an interesting place to be, but, you know, to let you know how I kind of reconcile that for myself, what I've come to recognize is that there's a beauty in the diversity of this program. You know, my sponsors, my sponsees, my friends in the fellowship are all very different types of people. Many work different types of food plans. Many have slightly different understandings of God, of a higher power, of a food plan, et cetera. And at the same time, the commonality, the piece that, you know, the glue is really a commitment to recovery, and a realization that I cannot do this by myself, and that I need a fellowship, and I need a power greater than myself. And that those, by the grace of God, tools and steps and traditions were all written for a purpose to help me in this process. So I can't work it willy-nilly, but at the same time, it doesn't have to be a cookie cutter approach as far as everybody doing the identical same thing. So so that's been a very interesting thing to contemplate as I was thinking about what I wanted to share today. So to give you a little bit about my experience as a compulsive overeater, I happened upon the idea even of 12-step recovery in college. And I was probably maybe 19 and went into the student center and saw a flyer that talked about an ABC meeting, you know, anorexics, bulimics, and compulsive overeaters. And two words that have been my greatest things to tackle in my years in recovery are ignorance and arrogance. And so my combo of ignorance and arrogance made me look at that flyer and go, yeah, no, that's not for me. You know, I feel bad for those people with their eating disorders, but I'm just fat and I don't need all of that. So, but thank goodness that I've got a higher power that knows me better than I know myself, and it planted a seed. So I walked away from the student center not feeling like it resonated, but something in me, you know, remembered this idea of this thing called Overeaters Anonymous. So then fast forward to, you know, years later, like I had then tried a bunch of diets, like many of us have, and pills and this and that, and I'd been in therapy and I'd done all these different things and still was finding that, you know, my weight was never going down. Every diet I tried was very short-lived because immediately I felt deprivation and I felt like it was punishment. So I'd stop. And then I'd go through a period of going, well, I'm just going to be, you know, okay with being just a big girl. And I worked for many, many years in the cosmetics and fashion industry. So I was like, all right, I know how to look good from the neck up. I'll just, you know, and you know, anybody be damned who wants to criticize fat people, screw you, because you're just judgmental. And I'm just going to love myself exactly the way I am, no matter how big I am. And so I kind of went with that for a while. It wasn't really truthful. You know, I really didn't feel as at ease in my own body as I would have liked to have pretended that I was. But it was just my way of just, you know, not yet surrendering to this thing called recovery and not being able to stick to a diet. So I kind of, you know, resigned myself for a while. But then, you know, something in me said, you know what, let me try that OA thing again. Let me just give it another shot. You know, maybe it's different. I'm from North Jersey, by the way, I'm from South Orange. And so at the time, you know, I was at school in Central Jersey. So now I'm in North Jersey. And I said, okay, you know what, let me look around and see if this OA thing exists up here too. And I found a meeting that was at the time a Big Book meeting. And so I was like, all right, well, I don't really know what a Big Book meeting is, but you know, I'll go to this thing and see if there's anything there for me. And I went, now, you know, here I am green and still not knowing anything about program and now hearing people talking about alcoholism. And I was like, okay, I'm not an alcoholic. I don't even drink. Nobody in my family is an alcoholic. I don't really get this whole thing. And what does this have to do with me? But something in some of the shares like perked my attention. And I was like, oh, you know, but they are talking about stuff that I can relate to. And I was like, all right, let me just sit here a minute and let me just see if there's anything in this for me. Cause you know, I've tried everything else, nothing else has worked. So let me just, you know, hang in there. And then the crazy thing is, I it was the first time I had heard people talking about their emotions in relation to their food or their lives in relation to their food. And I had never put those things really together for myself. So that caught my interest. And I became friendly with two people, one who became a dear and loving friend till she passed away, God rest her soul. And then one gentleman who became a toxic relationship for me that I never should have gotten into in the first place. But of course, you know what, honestly, the reality was at that point in my food and eating journey, I just really wanted to get thinner so I could get some male attention. I'm being real honest with you. That's what I came in for. I'd always felt like I'm too fat. But, you know, I'm everybody's best friend. I want a boyfriend. I want to feel attractive. And that's why I'm doing this. That was really at the heart of all of it. So here was this guy, he and I, you know, connected in an incredibly dysfunctional way, but it was all of a sudden, it was something. And he and I and this other friend kind of walked away from program and, you know, became fast friends. And so that was part of my research and development. But I did somewhere in there get a sponsor, lost about 20 pounds. She was brand spanking new as well. Neither one of us really knew what we were doing. We didn't know how to apply the steps or anything to it. It was really a diet at that point. And I was like, all right, well, you know, there's something to this thing. So of course I go away, do more research and development. And years later, I again got really desperate and I knew that nothing I was doing was working. I think I've gone all over the map in New Jersey. So I happened upon a group of West Jersey meetings that were focusing on newcomers and focusing on the tools and focusing on abstinence. And that's really what I needed in the moment because number one, all of it was really abstract to me. And I needed someone to say, what's a sponsor? What's a food plan? What's whatever. At the time we were using Dignity of Choice. I know over the years it's been in, it's been out, you know, but I needed some structure, and I needed to see and hear from people who were actually doing this long term, because I didn't need something that was going to work for 5 minutes and not. I'd failed enough times and stuff like that. So it was a blessing, and I met two, and over the years in those particular rooms had two incredible sponsors. I like to believe in what's been my experience is when me as a student is ready, the right teacher appears. So at the time, those were the.
I'm sorry, you got muted.
Apologies.
Better?
Sorry.
Thank you. No, thanks for letting me know. So I wound up losing a lot of weight. I lost 80 pounds. But again, I wasn't working the steps. I was really only working the tools. With a tough sponsor who said, be abstinent if your butt falls off. It does not matter. There is just no excuse to be abstinent. And I needed that. And that was helpful. But I didn't quite, again, get the full essence of the program at that time. And I moved away from New Jersey, kept that same sponsor. And again, I called her every day. I committed my food. I kept my weight off for some time. But in this other state I was living in, I didn't go to meetings. I wasn't doing any of the other pieces. So it really was kind of a diet at that point. But I was exploring now being in a normalish size body, again, getting the male attention, which was really what I was craving from Jump Street. And I'm sure you can figure out what happened from then. Because as a compulsive overeater, I don't have success outside of this program. I just don't. I've tried it. It does not work for me. God bless people that it works for. It does not work for me. So I did eventually meet a guy. I had not worked the steps and worked the parts of myself out in this program that I needed to work out to even be ready for a relationship. And it was terribly dysfunctional. Once again, I gained weight quickly. Because all of a sudden, my idea was a fruit became, a cocktail, and then it became this, and then it became that. And, little by little, I never had a big old sweeping binge. It was always a little bit of extra, a little bit less of what I needed in program, and a little bit more of what I did not need. And little by little, it always sent me back out. So fast forward to, I'm sure there are years in there I'm forgetting, but the one thing, why this idea of unity comes up for me, is that there's over the years, I've gone to so many different types of meetings, and I've had so many different sponsors, I've had sponsors who strictly take me through the steps. I've had sponsors who were working from more of a Food Addicts Anonymous food plan, and I did that for a while. I've had sponsors, who didn't work any of the steps, and again, there's so much diversity in the rooms. But what it really boils down to is what lengths was I willing to go to? Because the lengths to which I am willing to go to, there is somebody always there to guide me. And the literature doesn't change, the principles don't change, the steps don't change, the tools and traditions do not change. We get some new tools, which is great, like a plan of action. That's a relatively new one, which is awesome. But what I recognized is that it really is about me, and it's about to what degree have I wanted to work this program. And each time I've wanted to go a little further to help myself become healthier, to be closer to what I believe God wants me to be, is immediately the right person shows up, the right meeting shows up. Of course it's been difficult, going through the pandemic and everything and now being on Zoom, but what a gift in that now I can go to meetings all over the world, at any given moment. And that's been wonderful. And, I'll just say that, the past 10 years, I had a remarkable, remarkable sponsor, and I had some health things come up, and my weight had just come to a screeching halt. Like I'd hit a plateau, nothing was happening. I'm 55, I won't go, we're in mixed company of men and women. I won't go into all the details, but it's like, hormonally life and this, it's like I just hit a screeching plateau. And my doctor said, look, your cholesterol is not great. Your blood sugar is not great. Your blood pressure is not great, even within abstinence. And so I knew I had to do something different. And so, you know, I was able to transition to a new sponsor that worked with me on a slightly different food plan that you know, wasn't aligned with my former sponsor. But thank goodness, once again, we have that diversity. Like, she and I didn't have a big sweeping divorce. I love her. She's amazing. But I had to make some transitions, and she was okay with that. I was okay with that. And again, through the traditions of this program, keeps it such that I don't have to be comparing, and I don't have to be like, well, they got to do it this way, or they don't do it, or, you know, I'm wrong, or it doesn't have to be that way. You know, whatever I need to get the most out of this program, I am given the gift of that within the program, as long as I have the willingness to do that. So I'm grateful. So my weight's going down again, thank goodness. You know, I was able to shake up that plateau. And again, without it being a diet, I'm not white knuckling it. I found something that really works. Thank you, Judy. And at the same time, I'm not back into diet mentality. I love what was shared about, I intend to be abstinent, you know, one day at a time for the rest of my life. And I have no illusions about not ever having this disease, in the same way that, but I don't have to die from it, you know. And I look forward to actually going to my next doctor's appointment, because I know that physiologically I'm becoming healthier, and then emotionally and spiritually becoming healthier by just continuing to surrender. You know, I loved it. I heard it shared at a meeting not long ago, the difference between complying with a diet versus surrendering to recovery. And that's what I've found over the years, I've been able to do, is just really surrender. Like, this doesn't have to be an uphill battle. And at the same time, there is this beautiful diversity. You know, I'll just say this because, you know, I don't want to bring in an outside issue, but I tell you, the world is a crazy place right now, and it is so comforting for me to be in any meeting, any state, anywhere across the world, and to feel a kinship with people who are so different from myself. Myself, my sponsors, were different religions, were different backgrounds, were different ethnicities, and to have this kinship like this without us losing our individuality is a godsend. Like, I wish the world had this as a blueprint for how the world operates, because there's some wonderful magic of having no hierarchy here, having no one be the boss, having no one be greater or lesser. You know, our literature talks about that imagined ladder of self-worth. Like, it is imagined, like, we all are here together, you know, no one greater, no one lesser. And it's given me a life that I love. I love that I get to live in the promises. I've had one of the most difficult couple weeks of my life personally, with family and what have you. And yet I feel all right. You know, one day at a time through the difficulties, I'm really able to sit here saying that I feel that sunlight of the spirit. And so anyway, thank you for letting me share, and thank you for all listening and being here and being part of my extended OA family. It's great to see people from all over Jersey, and just let you know that I appreciate you. Thank you for letting me share.
Are you here?
Hi, everybody. Yeah, and then Ronnie, can you give me a 5-minute warning? I'm gonna
Sure.
try to myself too, but hi, everybody.
Sure, Joanne.
My name is Joanne. I'm a grateful compulsive overeater and food addict.
The world has never been more divine.
And I wanna thank Ross and Karen for their shares. I was a little late getting on because I had a commitment at church this morning, but I'll give you a little background about me, and then I really want to focus on the traditions today, because we're talking about unity. And I was at a meeting a few years ago where I shared about the traditions, and I found what I wrote, so I just thought I would share some of that. I am a relapse survivor. I've had a lot of ups and downs, never completely left program, but, you know, kind of, you know, I was a little bit shaky there at times. And so I came in of April in 1976. I was 20 years old, just turned 20. I it was really hard for me to relate. Everybody was older than me, married. And, you know, I've been on diet since I was 9 and a half, to be honest, when I was going to be in my sister's wedding. So, you know, I had already been to 2, you know, pay and weigh programs and all that nonsense, you know, and all the crazy diets. So, some part of myself, I knew that I belonged in OA, but like I said, I was young. I wanted to lose weight. I wanted to date, you know, I wanted to look more acceptable. I had gone out to work real young. My friends were in college. I just felt like life was passing me by. So I was very, very broken when I came into this program. And, you know, one of the best things I heard was keep coming back. And I did, you know, I kept coming back. And the other thing that I learned, which an older gentleman who's now in heaven, I'm sure, used to say it all the time, was we will love you until you learn to love yourself. And that love and acceptance that I got in OA, you know, was something that I didn't get anywhere else in my life. I really didn't. You know, I felt so much of my life like a mistake. You know, I felt like a failure in so many areas of my life. I felt like a mistake. I felt like I didn't know where I belonged. But in OA, I belonged, you know. So came in and I lost about 20 pounds, came in April. And then the holidays came and I left because I thought, well, you know, I look pretty good now, whatever, whatever. And of course, I came back in February and I had all my weight back on, with the exception of maybe 5 pounds. And I went to the Concord, which was a place where we used to go years ago for our conventions. And there was a couple, I don't know, like 2,000 people there. It was amazing. It really was amazing to see that many people who had the same problem as I did. I also had a very hard time thinking about this as a disease. You know, my brother who passed was a drug addict and alcoholic. It's easier for me to see mostly drugs. His problem as a disease than mine. Okay. I should say now I've been abstinent a little over 3 years. I'm maintaining about a 40-pound weight loss by the grace of God in this program. And, you know, but when he died, and I was really into the food and I was depressed and everything, I realized, you know, that if drugs had been my drug of choice, I would have been right there with him. You know, it would have been right there with him. I mean, that because that's where my disease had taken me. And I do believe today, it took a long time, but I do believe today that OA is the last house on the block. I really do, you know, and I know that there's nowhere else for me to go. There really is nowhere else for me to go. I worked the steps when I first came in, but I don't think I really understood what I was doing. You know, those 30 questions that are still around that have been around forever and ever. Well, when I came in, you had to do those 30 questions to be a food sponsor. And so I did them, but I did them sort of like homework to get them done. You know, today, what I realized today is that I have to actively be working the steps to stay abstinent emotionally, spiritually, and physically. If I'm not actively working the steps, sponsoring, being sponsored, helping other people, doing service, big part of my program, it's not going to work, because when I'm not actively working the steps, I don't have that relationship with my higher power, with God, as I understand him. I came in with a faith, okay, but that, and I would always pray for God to help me to lose weight, to stop eating compulsively, all this stuff, but I didn't want to do the work. That was the thing. I didn't want to do the work that, you know, that it's a lot of work. You know, they say this program is simple, but it's not easy. It's true, you know? And like the big book says, I had to concede to my innermost self that, you know, I had this disease. I had any idea that I can control this myself had to be smashed, because boy, I had plenty of examples of how I could not control this myself. That's for sure. So, I have a deep gratitude for this program today because I'd have no life without this program, you know, and program really gave me a life. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the tradition. So one thing that I love about the new 12 and 12, the second edition, first, you know, when it first came out, I thought, why do we need an updated version of the 12 and 12? You know, AA never updated their 12 and 12. What the heck are we doing? But I really like the fact that it says that, you know, that we have the spiritual principles that go along with each step in tradition. I really, really like that today. You know, so it says in the introduction to the traditions that the traditions are designed to keep our meetings and service bodies on track, functioning in such a way as to nurture the recovery of all compulsive overeaters who seek help in this fellowship. I really appreciate what the traditions have taught me and the principles behind them. I certainly didn't learn how to live peacefully with others in my family of origin or how to tackle a problem in a healthy way. You know, that I learned in program, you know, by doing service on intergroup and region, I learned how to agree to disagree. I learned to listen to other people's opinions. I learned to listen and not be thinking about what my answer was going to be before the person was even done talking, you know. And I learned about, I'm a real control addict too. And he learned how devastating that character defect can be for me when I try to control other people, especially people in my family. I have stepped away from the advice game with my family, you know, and I learned that here. I didn't learn that in work. I certainly didn't learn it in my family of origin because everybody was always trying to be top. And I learned that here, you know, and so tradition one says our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. So what does that mean to me? That means that I may not agree. I might not even like everybody in my meeting. Doesn't matter, okay? What's important is the unity of the program, not what I need, not what I want, but the unity of the program. So this, I don't have to live in isolation anymore, okay? Because of this wonderful program, I need the fellowship of OA. I'm not always going to agree with everyone, whether it's how they work the steps or how they do service or what their food plan is, whatever. Okay, but I need to remember this program is my lifeline. So I learned to agree to disagree. Through service, I always taught me about healthy conversation about issues that need to be taken care of and group conscience instead of always wanting things my way. You know, the last couple of years have been tough since the pandemic. Who doesn't want, you know, Zoom meetings or hybrid or, you know, what should we do? Should we go back to face-to-face? You know, all those things. Whoever, I didn't even know what Zoom was a couple of years ago, right? But, and, you know, seeing meetings close, which is very sad. When I went to the 2016 World Service Convention, which was the last World Service Convention we've had, which is pretty sad too, they talked about how our membership has gone down. That's real scary to me. That is really scary to me, you know? And I know they did say that it's hard to tell with phone meetings and stuff. And, you know, phone and internet meetings weren't as popular back then, how many people are on there. But we don't have the level of service that we had years ago. Like somebody else said, when I first started coming to LA, we had 50, 60 people at a meeting. You know, sometimes now we're happy if we have 10, 15 people at a meeting. We're like thrilled if we have 15 people at a meeting, you know, and not everybody wants to do service. That's the other thing. You know, I don't mean to complain, but I know this is a common issue that we don't have enough rotation of service. So people don't want to people want the meeting, but they don't want to do what it needs, you know, what needs to be done to run the meeting, to run intergroup, to do region, to do world service and all that kind of stuff. Okay, tradition three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. I had to remember this, you know, it's principles before personalities. Like I said before, I don't have to love everybody that's in my meeting. I don't have to agree with everybody that's in my meeting, but I have to accept them just like I have to, they have to accept me, because I'm sure what comes out of my mouth sometimes is not what they agree with either. So the spiritual principle with tradition three is identity. I think it's one of the most important traditions. Everyone is welcome if they have desire to stop eating compulsively. Doesn't matter if you have 5 pounds to lose or 105 pounds to lose, it doesn't matter. Okay, you are welcome here. For much of my life, as I said before, I never felt a part of the group. I didn't feel a part of it in school. I just didn't feel it, you know? And this tradition guarantees that I'm always welcome in OA, and I need to welcome everyone who needs this program. You know, I always tell my sponsees, like I said before, I've had a lot of ups and downs in program. I don't care how you're doing, how lousy you're feeling, get to a meeting, because you are not going to recover in isolation. I am not going to recover in isolation. That's why we need the fellowship. That's what Unity Day is all about, celebrating the fellowship as a whole. Okay, so, you know, there was plenty of times, and I'm not proud to say this, that I came to meeting, I had been eating before the meeting, maybe I ate after the meeting, you know, and I'm not happy to say that, but it kept coming back because somebody told me way back when, keep coming back. And like a part of me knew in my heart, there was nowhere else for me to go. The other tradition I wanted to talk about was tradition five. Each group has but one primary purpose: to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. And the principle that I'm muted. Okay, I unmuted. Okay. Okay, so the spiritual principle of tradition five is purpose. How do I carry the message? What do newcomers think when they visit my group? Do they hear the message or do they hear the mess, you know, when I share? Do I call newcomers or reach out to them? I'm still not great with the phone. You know, I have to admit, I could make more phone calls than I do. Do I reach out to returning members or do I just talk to the people that are my closest friends? Because really my closest friends are in this program. There's no doubt about that, you know. To me, I just love spending time with my close friends, and they're all in program, you know. These are all important reminders of how I need to always consider others. And in doing so, I'm strengthening my program. I learn from my sponsees all the time. I learn from newcomers all the time. If I keep my ears open, you know, and listen and learn. One thing I know is I always have to remain teachable. No, if I forget to be teachable, I'm in trouble, because when I got abstinent this last time, you know, I prayed for the gift of desperation, because I knew that if I forgot how miserable it was to be in the food, I would be back there. There was no doubt in my mind. And the other thing,
Joanne, you've got 5 more minutes. I'm sorry.
Thank you. No, that's good. The other thing I prayed for was not to be complacent, not to get complacent. You know, it doesn't mean, because I'm thin now and I've been thin for a while, that I can, you know, as they say, rest on my laurels. No, it doesn't work that way. If anything, I have to work harder. You know, I have to work harder. I have to, I am very sensitive. From a physical standpoint, I'm very sensitive to certain foods and ingredients and all that kind of stuff. I have to be really, really careful. Well, for example, yesterday we had a family party to go to. There was nothing on that menu except for salad that we could eat. And I had to call, that's what I learned here. I had to call the restaurant and say, look, you know, my sister and I, who is in program, who I live with, which is a blessing, we have to have something different than what you have on the menu because that's not going to work for us. I would never have done that. Years ago, I would have been so embarrassed, you know, and part of my story is I did go to treatment. It's just a tool. It's a tool. It is not the be all end all. It's just that I had gone through, at that point in my life, I'd gone through a very bad divorce, lost my mom to dementia, and I was very, very depressed. And I needed to go somewhere for a month where I focused on me. And I learned good tools there. I did learn really good tools there. But I still had to work my program, you know, because the problem's up here. You know, food, they say food is not the problem. Food was my solution for everything. And that's why I have to keep coming back, because I have to hear what all of you say. I have to hear what people talk about when they come back after they've struggled like I did, because I have to keep my memory green, you know, and I have to hear how important it is for me to support my meeting, my inner group, my region, you know, all that, you know, because without that, there's no OA. And I don't know how I would live without this program. I really don't. So, you know, I'm glad to be, I know it's not quite 5 minutes, but I know people want to share. So I'm glad to be here today. I'm glad to be able to share. I hope I kept with the subject of unity, what unity means to me and the fellowship. As I said, I'm so grateful to God for this fellowship because it gave me back my life. Thanks for letting me share.